President Joe Biden has warned that Russia's invasion of Ukraine will cause food shortages. If such is indeed the case, we must pause to ask, should we buy an emergency food supply or should we make our own?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1312th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Nagasaki who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, what goes around does come around. And that being the case, it's time to reconsider the Boy Scout model. Be prepared. Why be prepared? Well, for one reason, President Joe Biden warned that the sanctions placed on Russia for its invasion of the Ukraine will result in food shortages. The president said, it's going to be real. The price of these sanctions is not just imposed on Russia. It's imposed upon an awful lot of countries as well, including European countries and our country. When the president tells us there will be food shortages, we should listen. Or maybe we will find ourselves in a COVID shutdown like that imposed on our friends in Shanghai, who are locked up in their domiciles with only limited access to the grocery store. And when they are finally given access to the grocery store, all they find there are empty shelves. Or maybe our money will lose its value, as it has for our friends down there in Venezuela. We hear that Venezuelan government recently raised the country's minimum wage to 7 million bolivars per month. However, those 7 million bolivars are not enough money to buy 2 pounds of meat. The fact is, we are now dependent on a food chain that extends from where we eat to where our food was grown, and that chain, as we all know, is only as strong as its weakest link. Hopefully, what goes around will not come around here, and we can all happily enjoy the bounties of living in America the Beautiful. But even so, we would all feel much better if we, like the Boy Scouts, became prepared. And so we begin with the question, should we buy an emergency food supply or should we make one of our own? Well, here to help us find the answer, we have someone who lives preparedness. She is the outdoor girl, Brooke Whipple, and she's a podcaster, a video caster, a YouTuber, and host of the Girl in the Woods YouTube channel. Brooke, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how on earth did you go from being a nice Michigan girl to being the outdoor girl?
Well, you know, growing up in Michigan, it is very much a culture, rural Michigan. People here really love the outdoors, hunting, fishing, everything that nature has to give you, which is an abundance of outdoor activities. We have some wonderful natural resources here in Michigan. So growing up, you know, I just really gravitated towards that. I would just run through the woods and the fields and build forts and hunt with my dad and go fishing. And, you know, just it's really a way of life for a lot of people here. And that just kind of led to more and more adventurous pursuits across the country, the West, and ended up in Alaska finally for most of my adult life.
Not much farther you can go except maybe Siberia from there, right?
Right.
So,
right.
That's what happens to those of us who have this wanderlust. We keep going west until we run into the ocean, and then there we are. So that, I guess that's how I ended up where I ended up. But with respect to this business of survival food, I've had a number of people, you know, say, well, geez, Olson, you should do a food chain on survival food. So I started pinging around the internet, and You were probably one of the more fascinating internet YouTubers with respect to survival food, because instead of just selling something, you offer a way of doing it yourself. And you kind of say, should you buy it or should you make it yourself? Which is always one of my favorite questions. And so that's what we'd like to explore today, if possible. But first, take us outside into your world of the great outdoors. And how do you manage your food when you leave civilization and go out there?
Well, there's a lot of ways to approach that. Maybe you know, or maybe you don't know, my husband and I were both on the television show Alone on the History Channel, and that is where you're dropped off into the wilderness by helicopter with only 10 items to survive as long as you possibly can.
Well, wait a minute. Are you still married?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. We've always lived a very unconventional life as entrepreneurs and self-employed people, kind of chasing down the things that really interest us and doing things with our hands. Mm-hmm. So we basically are together 24/7. You know, we've been married now 24 years this year, so we're very comfortable being in tight spaces. So that worked out for us. It was just like another day, just like at home. But in that situation, you're living off the land. And a lot of people have a romantic notion that, you know, if things really got bad, you know, and if you have a few skills, you can just go live off the land. And for any fans of the show Alone, know how hard you've seen people struggle to make that a reality. Living off the land is incredibly hard. And if we were really in a desperate situation, there would be, you know, you wouldn't be the only ones out there trying to get the resources.
We would all be out there.
That's right. So the competition for the available game and the resources would be present as well. So that is a very difficult scenario, no matter whether you've planned for it or not. It's just really tough. So we survived 49 days on Vancouver Island, remote island in British Columbia, Canada. And then the next season, I was dropped in Mongolia and survived 28 days alone there, living off the land. Let me tell you, you're in a state of starvation. It's just really tough. You're just, you know, you've got grasshoppers and maybe a squirrel comes by if you can harvest that, or a grouse and fish. And it's just, there's very little to sustain you and keep the clock from going backwards on your body, which is, you know, starvation is always right, knocking at the door. So it's just really tough. So, you know, supplementing yourself with resources from the great outdoors is definitely possible. But ultimately, you're going to need to bring some food with you.
And so when you go out camping with your husband, what kind of food do you take with you?
It depends on what kind of situation we're going to be in. But if you're going to be, you know, remote, you want to think about foods that won't need refrigeration, that won't spoil, that can last and are light, you know, at times. So a lot of times dehydrated food or freeze-dried food, those are the kind of things that are really easy to take with you.
Mm-hmm. So backpacker food, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Shelf-stable foods, you know, grains. And anything that you can manage with not a ton of cooking, preferably, and that is light and can be, you know, easily put together. Mm-hmm. So and won't spoil.
And what if you're not going so far out there, but are, you know, kind of car camping? What kind of food would you bring in that situation?
Well, I'll tell you what my favorite is, a steak and mushrooms, and that can be supplemented by wild mushrooms. That is my ultimate favorite food. I always bring at least a steak for the first night, just because, you know, I'm a big fan of food. I really love food. I love to celebrate food in the outdoors. I'm always cooking over a fire, directly on the coals or over a grate on the flames. So some kind of protein, you know, you can do chicken. And in the mornings, I'm cooking up a big skillet breakfast with eggs and sautéed onions and peppers. And, you know, maybe some bacon.
Oh, my goodness.
I go
big. It
makes
me hungry.
I mean, if you've seen, yeah, if you've seen my videos, you know I'm a big fan of food and cooking on the fire and celebrating that in the outdoors. So,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on where you're going.
And who takes the videos while you're doing all of these things out there? Is that your husband?
No, everything is self-filmed, and it was self-filmed on those shows as well. We did not have a camera crew, so you were truly alone. But yeah, been filming myself on my adventures for, gosh, 15 years.
Well, you know, with respect to cooking on a fire and eating out there, food always seems to taste so much better out there. Am I wrong?
Oh, my gosh. No kidding. It's so good. You know, that cup of coffee in the morning and that, you know, I'm a big fan of pour over coffee. And when that hot water that you've boiled on the stove or over the fire hits that, those grounds and that steam rises up in your face. And then you can sit by your fire and have a cup of coffee in the morning and watch the sunrise. I mean, it's magical. There's no denying it. And it's the best ever.
Do you know of anybody who's ever done a study on that phenomenon, that eating food outside, even on a picnic table in the backyard? It just tastes better outside.
That is the power of the outdoors. And I am super interested in that concept in general of just how nature can rejuvenate you and restore you. And I really do think it enhances absolutely every aspect of you, and including enhances your senses. So I'm a big fan of that. That'd be a really great study. What a wonderful thing it is to eat outside.
And that's a big part of your world, and it's a big part of the world that you bring to us via your videos. And your videos are, I guess people can find them at the Girl in the Woods YouTube channel. And I've had a chance to gaze into them myself, and I get hungry just looking at them. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. And today we're talking about eating survival food, emergency food. What are we going to do if the world falls apart? And I thought, who better to ask than somebody who makes her living being prepared for whatever does come. She is Brooke Whipple, the host of The Girl in the Woods. And when we come back, we're going to ask Brooke whether we should buy our survival food from in buckets, or should we should make it ourselves. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Oh, yes, we are hungry today. We're hungry for that steak and mushrooms fried up on a campfire someplace outside. It sounds so good. I couldn't believe it. Got really hungry just thinking about it, Brooke. So let's talk a little bit about what really is essential. And, you know, when you're way out there in the wilderness, you know, thrust into the wilderness without anything to eat, you still need to eat essential things, among them protein, carbohydrates, fats, and vitamins and minerals. What was hardest for you to find out there?
Fats for sure are the hardest in if you're actually just foraging and trying to subsist off what the land provides. Fat is definitely going to be the hardest thing to come upon. So unless you're able to harvest a moose or, you know, a wild hog or, you know, some kind of animal that has a really good store of fat, you know, even then you're going to be hard pressed to get enough fat in your diet in the wild. So yeah, it's pretty tough. You need those dairies. You need some, you know, even chia seeds and quinoa and stuff has some protein in it. And you need that fat.
Need
butter,
the fat.
Just a stick of butter. Boy, if I would add some butter, I'm a big fan of butter. You just crave, your body needs that fat. Because no matter how many rabbits or fish you know, you're consuming, and usually it's still not enough. They have this thing called rabbit starvation, where you could be eating just tons and tons of wild rabbits, and you're thinking you're getting enough food, but rabbit's so lean, you know, hare or rabbit, the meat is so lean that despite eating protein, you will still go into starvation mode because there's just not enough fat.
It's interesting, here in civilization, we're always told to eat lean meat, but when it really comes down to it, that fat is very precious stuff to find. What about carbohydrates when you're out there? What do you do for carbohydrates?
Carbs, you know, they're hard too. I mean, it's all hard. I think it's easier to get protein than a lot of the other things out there. If you think about what's in nature, you're going to find, you know, some greens in season. You're going to get some berries in season. You're going to get mushrooms in season. But if you're not in that season, you're not going to get it. And the best thing you can do is try for some proteins, like salmon too, would be a good source of fat.
Good fat.
It's really, really rich, good fats. So, you know, it is so variable on the area you're in, what's available. And so you kind of need to do your research. Mm-hmm. But yeah, carbs and fats, they're hard to come by.
Okay.
You know, there are certain things you can dig up, some certain wild plants that do have a little bit of carbohydrates in them, in starches like cattail roots, and there are some other bulb type wild plants that you can research and will give you a little bit of carbs.
But, especially if you know what you're eating, and if you don't know what you're eating, who knows what you're going to get. So
yeah, you've got to know what you're foraging.
The other important thing, of course, vitamins and minerals.
Yeah. Yeah, that you're going to get a lot of that from berries and some vegetation. You know, nettles are a great source of vitamins and minerals. You know, people sometimes don't realize you can steam nettles and you can cook them up, and they taste a lot like spinach. They kind of wilt, and the little stingy hairs kind of go away. You know, dandelions, and there's all kinds of grasses and vegetation near the ocean that's good. You know, the seaweeds and goose tongue, and, you know, there's just all kinds of good stuff. It really is dependent on the area you're in and the seasons with berries and vegetation.
So if you're out in the middle of Michigan in the middle of winter when the snow's 3 feet deep, you're going to have some trouble no matter what, I would suspect.
You're definitely going to have some trouble. You know, you could take some spruce tips and get some tea and vitamin C from the spruce tips or the hemlock, boil them in some tea. You can dig down through the snow, and a lot of times you can find winter berries that are still completely edible, and you can make tea and eat the winter berries. But yeah, it's a tough go. It's
tough,
really
go.
Tough.
Well, let's talk a little bit about emergency food or survival food. We all look at the world in which we live, and it seems to be particularly crazy right now. Occasionally we have periods of time when we think things aren't crazy, but that's probably when they're really crazy and we're just not paying attention. So people think, even my wife approached here recently, what should we do to start building an emergency food larder? And I guess there's two ways of going about it. You can buy it or you can build it. I guess in either case you have to buy it, but you can buy ready-made survival gear. And when I went looking for survival food, I think there must be a million people selling survival food now.
Oh man, the pandemic really, really put a fire under companies to start offering more of this type of product. And I think, it was interesting because right at the beginning of the pandemic, just for fun, I started going to some of the bigger survival food companies just to see what they had going on. And of course, everything was sold out because, you know, everybody waited until there was an emergency to plan for an emergency. And that didn't work out. I know they were backed up months and months and months on their supplies. So I think a lot of companies.
Is that not lesson number one?
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think we all should have learned lesson number one with the beginning of the pandemic.
So when it's time for you and me and everybody to be prepared, it's too late to prepare.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all saw the empty food shelves in the grocery stores and the lack of toilet paper and people just being, you know, crazy. And that's a whole other subject, I think, to be studied. But I think you have to prepare for that, too. But I like to tell people, you know, I think the whole subject can feel overwhelming. But why don't you just start framing it in the idea of, can I survive 2 weeks without power? Because a lot of times it's not a pandemic. It's not something, you know, apocalyptic. It's a power outage that's going to get you. It's a tornado. It's a hurricane. It's a wildfire. Maybe that's more of a leave your house situation sometimes. But, you know, could you go 2 weeks without going to the store and having power? Could you cook? Could you have enough water? Can you take care of your sanitation? Can you stay warm or stay cool, either or? Do you have the medicines you need? But start framing it in just a simple 2 week framework, and then it seems a little more doable.
Well, on your YouTube channel, you offer some advice where you say, well, which is best? Do I buy the survival food in buckets, or do I put it together myself? And you start with a company that offers a bucket of food for 2 weeks for one person for $100. And then you have a table full of food that you put together yourself. So let's kind of go through that because it was very interesting. First of all, a survival food company wanted you to represent them with your YouTube channel and sell their products. Describe that process for us, will you please?
Yeah, you know, as a YouTuber, you're going to get a lot of proposals to have companies that want to have you feature their product or represent their product on your YouTube channel. And I do so very, very few. I don't really do any. And I had a company reach out.
Well, why is that? First, why is that? Why don't you do a lot of them? Maybe you could buy a business jet if you did.
Yeah, for sure. I just feel like it is still a bought opinion. Unless it's a product that I'm just completely 100% behind and feel like it is really, really going to benefit my subscribers by featuring it, then I usually, most, I would say 99.9% of the time, I don't even open the email. but I am interested in a lot of stuff, and the stuff that I use, I usually just tend to buy myself so I can present an honest opinion with no bias about the thing. Okay. But so they approached me. It's a reputable company. It's not that they're not. But I said, you know what, before I do anything, I need to look and see what it is. So send me the product, and then I'll take a look and make a decision. So I didn't commit to, you know, represent them or do a review or anything. Mm-hmm. So I got the bucket.
And most of them come in buckets, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of times, because that's just a really convenient way to store things.
Right.
In a bucket. It kind of helps with the things that are going to hurt your food are light, you know, temperature, and pests, and moisture.
So if you have it in a sealed bucket, yeah. So they're offering convenience, right?
For sure. And, you know, that's what you're really paying for is that convenience. So I got the bucket and I start pulling these things out, and they're packaged in Mylar bags because a bucket alone won't really, there's still microscopic pores in a plastic bucket that will allow for oxygen exchange. So if you package things in a Mylar bag and then put like an O2 absorber in there, it's going to really prolong the life of your food up until, you know, 20 years or so, depending on the product. So all of these things in the bucket were in a Mylar bag, you know, with an oxygen absorber, you know, with a 20-year shelf life. Great. But as I'm pulling all this stuff out, it's $100 bucket, but it's really low value, carbohydrate heavy, food. So like pancake mix, white rice, oatmeal, you know, potato soup, mac and cheese, like really kind of low bottom dollar carbs. And I just thought, wow, for $100, that's a lot of carbohydrate heavy food. And it doesn't cost much. Like I could do better.
So in other words, it sounds like you're getting about a dollar's worth of food for $10.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I felt. But again, you're paying for that convenience. Somebody already did the thinking for you. Somebody already, you know, says how many servings. And I did cook up the potato soup. It was good. No problem with it. It tasted good. But I just thought, I don't know, for $100, I can't represent this particular bucket. Now, of course, they sell different buckets, and that the price varies, and that's with every company. You're going to have protein buckets. You're going to have vegetable buckets. You're going to have, you know, mixed buckets of just a plain old two-week, you know, take this for 2 weeks. So this bucket really had mainly carbohydrates in it, and I thought, gosh, 2 weeks on this, you're going to need a lot of water to flush this stuff out. And so that really just propelled me to start looking into doing it myself. And
well, before we go on to how you do it yourself, how would one go about shopping for the best value in a bucket of survival food? What would you do?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to find somebody with an honest opinion. And there are tons of forums out there. There's tons of online resources for you to do your homework. I mean, anytime you're going to spend that kind of money, you should be investigating the company. You should be investigating the reviews, and see what you're buying. Make sure you're buying something that is just not just going to give you peace of mind, but it's going to be good as well. So definitely do your homework. I mean, there are bigger companies out there. There are companies that more pander to the emergency panic part of, you know, the emotional side of it. And I wouldn't really support those kind of companies that they're just selling the panic. So, yeah, just do your homework.
So even though everything is made there for you, you still have to do all of this homework to figure out which one is worth buying and which one is worth putting out in the garage so that you know you have something there to take care of you for a couple of weeks. And really, it's kind of like you're looking for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good place to start. You know, think about having a protein, a carbohydrate, and some kind of fat, you know, or vegetable.
Now, what kind of fat did
they have?
For your
family, a couple servings.
Yeah. What kind of fat did they have in the bucket?
Well, you know, if you think about, like, fats aren't storable as well.
Right.
So you're going to probably have to take care of fats on your own. So peanut butter, you know, chocolate, so some of those just really quick, nice sugars to give you some fat. You know, you can actually get butter powder these days. That's a good long-lasting product. But a lot of that stuff's not going to come in a bucket, so you've got to take care of the fats yourself. So let me back up. I should have said protein, vegetable, and like a carbohydrate, so yeah. Or a fruit. You know, you're looking for a couple servings of that per person per day in a bucket, or you're going to buy buckets that just have one of those things in it and then, you know, do your own combining. So you're going to want a carbohydrate bucket, get a bucket with some proteins in it, and get a bucket with some veggies or, you know, fruits in it. And all those are freeze-dried, and they're very expensive. So that's why the carbohydrate-heavy buckets are more prevalent, because they are more affordable. But even in the big picture, you can do way better on your own.
Yeah. Well, good. And so that's what we need to consider is that it sounds like even though you might buy buckets of survival food, it isn't going to be sufficient to survive on. So you have to really give that a consideration. Where are you going to get your fats? Where are you going to get your proteins? You have to measure all of those things anyway. So you may as well think about doing it yourself. And that's what we're going to think about when we get back from this break. We're with Brooke Whipple, who is the outdoor girl and host of the Girl in the Woods YouTube channel. What a fun thing to look at and enjoy. We will be right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it's a pretty crazy world out there, and who knows what's going to come around the corner at us. I look and see what's happening around the world. I look at Shanghai right now, where half the city is locked down, can't leave their home. They're putting motion sensor detectors on their doors, so if you open the door, they're going to know. So if you don't have some food stored away, what are you going to do? Or maybe, you know, things get really crazy like they are down there in Venezuela, where the minimum wage is 7 million bolivars a month, but that's not enough to buy 2 pounds of meat. So who knows what can happen? And what we should think about is we should be prepared for whatever can happen. And the best place to start is have a couple of weeks of food that's stored away and that you can survive on. So we're going to talk now with Brooke Whipple about building our own survival stash of food. And where do we start, Brooke?
Well, a couple of things to keep in mind is if you don't have power, how are you going to cook your food that you've stored? So a lot of your choices might depend on, you know, do you have a propane stove to use if the power went out? Do you have, you know, a little portable Coleman camp stove? Do you have a little portable backpacking stove that runs off of butane canisters? You know, do you have a wood stove? Do you have a fireplace? Do you have a space outside you could cook on a fire? Do you have a grill you could cook some food? So, you know, there's so much to think about besides just a bucket of food. So start there. Like, okay, I got this food. How am I going to cook it? And then make some food choices. Like, you want to choose food that you normally would eat and that you want to eat and you enjoy eating. Because if you just have a bucket of rice and you never eat rice, you're going to get, you know, very fatigued eating that for 2 weeks with nothing else. So start with things that you enjoy eating. And the beautiful thing about doing this yourself is you get to choose where that food came from, and it might be your garden. I dehydrate a lot of food from my garden. I can food from my garden. You know, I freeze foods from my garden.
How do you preserve them? When you, for example, when you freeze dry your food, how do you preserve them?
So if you're freeze drying food, it is with a home freeze dryer, which I do have. That's a quite a heavy investment in the food storage game, and that again is why so many buckets that are freeze dried are expensive. The process to freeze dry it is expensive, but I can do that myself. The other thing you can do is dehydrate foods. They do lose a little bit of their nutritional value through dehydration, which it does not happen through freeze drying. So it's kind of two different ways to preserve foods. But dehydrating is a very viable option, and you can store some food that's dehydrated. I have dehydrated carrots and zucchini and wild leeks or ramps that I have dehydrated. And they're in my basement in a dark place in jars with oxygen absorbers, and they're going to last a good long time.
And you put together some Mylar bags too, kind of like Seal-A-Meal kinds of Mylar bags, correct?
Absolutely. So when you pick out what food you like, you're going to want to order some Mylar bags. And Mylar is just kind of,
it's what they make balloons with, right?
Yeah, a thinner type. Yeah, the bags are heavier, and they don't allow any passage of oxygen. And so that's important in long-term food storage. And then also you're going to want to purchase some oxygen absorbers. And you place those in the bags with your food and seal it up. And then that's when I put it in a 5-gallon bucket for extra protection. And then it just sits there. So once you've chosen your food, you just put it in your Mylar bags, throw in the appropriate sized oxygen absorber. You can seal it with an iron. You can seal it with a hair straightener iron, you know, just some kind of heat, and, you know, maybe suck out some of the extra air with a straw, and there you go. You're good to go. So you can, you can very easily do that kind of stuff at home and save a lot more money than buying just a bucket with the real low rent carbs.
Right. And then you get to plan your own meals too. So
you absolutely get to choose what you want and plan where it comes from. And, you know, you can get organic oats, you can get organic everything. And I probably guess that a lot of the stuff in the buckets is not bad,
right?
But pre-made buckets.
Well, what kind of protein would you include in your emergency food larder?
So I have canned venison in my basement from deer that are harvested myself. So shelf life on canned venison, I would put at least 5 years. So that's a good long-term protein option. We have canned fish as well. If you have access to a dehydrator, I'm sorry, a freeze dryer, I freeze dry all manner of meats. So I have hamburger and ham and cheese and all kinds of other type of proteins freeze dried. And that shelf life is 20 years plus.
Wow.
In Mylar bags. So that protein is shelf stable and I can pull it out at any time.
Add water?
Yep, you can dehydrate it. It comes right, or rehydrate it. It comes right back to the state it was, and then you can go ahead and cook it as is, or if it's already cooked, you can just add it to whatever else you're cooking, a soup or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And carbohydrates?
Yeah, anything from all of the grains, you know, rice, pastas, quinoa, bulgur, wheat berries. I have wheat berries in the basement. Wheat flour does not store long term, but wheat berries do. So I package that in Mylar bags with an oxygen absorber. If I ever needed flour, I would just break open those bags of wheat berries and I grind it in my hand crank grinder, which turns it into flour. So any manner of carbohydrates that you enjoy eating, and that could be even pastas, and all the grains, the rices, all that stuff is really great long-term storage.
What about powdered eggs?
Yeah, absolutely. You can buy powdered eggs on their own. You can do powdered eggs in a freeze dryer if you have one or have access to one. And, you know, I got to go back to the home freeze dryer. I mean, the one I have is about $3,000. They're not cheap. But if you have a group of friends, and you can all kind of get together and buy a share of a freeze dryer and have access. Everyone can just, you know, have a share in this freeze dryer and use it. That's a really great way to kind of share that expense and all get the value out of, you know, home freeze drying yourself.
I see forming a freeze dryer co-op.
Totally. And then, you know, you can all share your produce that you're, you know, hopefully everyone out there is gardening. Even if it's just container gardening on a patio, you know, you don't have to live in the country and have a giant garden. You can have a lot of food growing on a balcony in an apartment, you know. So gardening is just another next step to the whole preparedness thing, and growing your own food is just wonderful.
And it sounds like the real secret to everything just about is a freeze dryer, because you can keep it for much longer. It's very light, easy to package away and store and whatnot.
Yeah, the other wonderful thing about it is if you, like, let's just say you do like a big batch of chili, you can freeze dry the whole batch of chili. And all you have to do is add hot water. So the cooking time, you know, you just add hot water and you could just let it sit and rehydrate. You know, the Mountain House meals, all those freeze-dried backpacker meals that are like $10 a piece for two servings that you can take on the long hikes, and, you know, all this stuff is really expensive, but the beauty of it is all you have to do is add hot water, and it's cooked.
Do you?
So it's really great.
Yeah. Do you use a lot of them when you're out hiking, just for convenience and ease of use?
Not very often. They are very expensive. I honestly prefer just to have, you know, Pilot crackers, a block of cheese. Cheese will last a long time, even without refrigeration. Jerkies, peanuts, you know, put some honey in there for some sweetener, for some teas that you can make in the woods. So there's a lot of good ways to just travel. But if you really want that super lightweight factor, there's no doubt that freeze-dried foods are definitely the king.
What about peanut butter in your larder?
Peanut butter is good to have. The shelf life's only about 18 months. It does go rancid due to the high fat content. So you can have a lot of things as you're building your long-term food storage that are rotation products. So I have, you know, canned corned beef. I have corned beef and hash. I have canned ham. I have, you know, peanut butter. I have ghee, which is just a clarified butter in jar form. And some of those products are, you know, a year and a half or less, you know, maybe 2 years, maybe three. So you kind of can start a rotation product process. So when you go to the grocery store, you buy maybe an extra canned good or two of a certain thing, but you rotate them out. Same for canned goods like vegetables or fruits, you know, soups, anything that's canned, you know, is going to have a shelf life of 2 years or less usually. Even just keeping a few cans extra on hand and rotating through it, spaghetti sauce, you know, anything you can think of. It's another good way to have just another source of extra food.
That's pretty much what we do at the house is, you know, we have a lot of things like that we rotate through, but peanut butter tends not to last very long at my house because of me.
It's good stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. Get protein, you get fat, and if it's the right kind of peanut butter, you're doing pretty good.
Right. I mean, it's kind of sweet all its own. Tastes good.
So how much is, you say, what is the price difference between doing it yourself and buying it, do you think?
You know, I haven't done a really strict cost analysis on this, but if I had to think off the top of my head, all you need to do is buy some Mylar bags and oxygen absorbers, and they're really not that expensive. It's a nice thing to have, and you can get buckets anywhere. As long as your food isn't touching directly in the bucket, you don't have to get food grade buckets. So, you know, there's a lot of places you can get secondhand buckets.
Right.
A lot of bakeries, too, and delis and stuff. They've got an abundance of buckets. You can a lot of times get those for free or a dollar or two. It's just another layer of protection for your Mylar-bagged food. So once you have those things, and, you know, and it's just nice to stack. I also use Rubbermaid containers, just like the kind you can go to any big box store and just buy a Rubbermaid container with a lid. Those work good, too, just for that extra layer of protection. So once you invest in just some of those really simple basic things, the Mylar bags, the O2 absorbers, the buckets, you know, you're off to the races with any kind of food you choose, and it's your price that you choose to buy them at. So I would say a third of the cost of those pre-made buckets is what you could do yourself.
Plus, you get to choose your own menu.
That's right. So, plus, you're making the choice of the food. Yeah.
So instead of buying, you know, Mylar bags filled with pancake mix, you might have something that you would really enjoy eating, and it would give you
or at the very least sourced from where you want it sourced from.
Yeah, that's a big deal when it gets right down to it.
It is.
So step number one: think 2 weeks, right?
That's my opinion. It makes it more manageable. It makes it seem like not an overwhelming task. Think about how many people are in your household. Count children as adults, and give everybody three servings of carbs, proteins, and fruit and or vegetables every day. And you can go by the servings that are on a can. Those are good, accurate serving size counts. And just make a plan for, you know, every person in your household, 3 servings of each of those things every day.
For 2 weeks?
And go from there. For 2 weeks, yep.
There you go.
And don't forget water, for sure. And don't forget the sanitation and the heat and all the other good things that go along with it.
And toilet paper. Don't forget toilet paper.
Yes. Toilet paper.
Well, we have just a minute left, Brooke, but I would like for you to extend an invitation to all the audience to go outdoors with you. How do they do that?
Oh, I'd love to have you join me in the outdoors. It's just, it's the best place to feel good and get restored and take a break from all of your digital life and all your stresses and your problems and come outside with me. Yep, go to Girl in the Woods on YouTube. Just type in Brooke Whipple or Girl in the Woods, take you right there to my channel, and you can just come hang out with me in the woods at the cabin or on the fire. Let's eat some good food and be joyful.
Steak with mushrooms sizzling on the fire. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host, with Brooke Whipple. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain: the farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.